The words in the title of the sermon today, The Pursuit of Happiness, they come obviously from the American Declaration of Independence. Today we might call these words a mission statement for the United States of America. Our mission is the pursuit of happiness. Now, Thomas Jefferson did not invent these words. They come from the Scottish Enlightenment and a Presbyterian minister named Francis Hutcheson. About 40 years before Jefferson wrote our Declaration of Independence, Reverend Hutcheson was a professor at the University of Glasgow. He taught that the ultimate goal in life is happiness. He did not mean by happiness physical pleasure. He believed that we become happy by helping other people. Our moral sense tells us, if we listen to it, that the goal of our life is to be happy, and that we become happy when we are kind, benevolent, and caring towards others. Hutcheson said, "If people find true happiness only in helping others, this provides the basis of all social organization, including that of governments." He said, "We can only pursue happiness by helping others when we are free to help others." He opposed restrictions on the freedoms of women, arguing that human rights are universal and do not recognize any distinction based on gender. He opposed slavery, arguing that the greatest cause of unhappiness in the world was slavery. Francis Hutcheson believed in maximizing personal liberty so that all of us would be free to pursue happiness by helping others. Now, he died in 1746, but when Thomas Jefferson arrived in Philadelphia in May of 1776, Jefferson had been studying the Scottish Enlightenment philosophers for 16 years, as had many others in the Continental Congress. When reading Jefferson's draft of the Declaration of Independence, many in the room in Philadelphia found the phrases and sentences familiar. Jefferson wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." This became the mission statement, the guiding purpose of our country, to be repeated by Abraham Lincoln in the midst of our own Civil War, and by Martin Luther King Jr. 100 years later. Now, although people have written about happiness for centuries, as far as I can tell, scientific research on happiness is very recent. It started with Dr. David Myers, a professor of psychology at Hope College in Michigan. Dr. David Myers measured happiness by asking people if they are happy, assuming that self-reporting would be accurate. And in 1992, he published the results of his research. He reported that most people feel that if they had more money, they would be happier. However, he discovered that after meeting our basic needs of food, shelter, and reasonable security, money does not influence self-reported happiness. Once beyond poverty, further economic growth does not improve human morale. Dr. Myers gave as evidence a survey of the 49 wealthiest Americans as listed by Forbes. He asked them if they were happy, and as a group, they reported being only slightly happier than the average person in the United States. Dr. Myers' research confirmed that our feelings of well-being hinge on how we are doing compared with our fellow workers, our friends, compared to our extended family. Now, this is something that's been said for many years before Dr. Myers. Ambrose Bierce defined happiness as an agreeable sensation arising from contemplating the misery of another. We compare ourselves to other people. I certainly fall into this tendency to compare myself to others. I remember an experience I had on an airplane in 2003. I boarded the airplane for a flight that would last several hours. Sitting in the back of the plane, I was sitting in the back of the plane, and a flight attendant came up to me, and she asked if I would be willing to change seats so a family could sit together. I was traveling alone, so I said yes, and she moved me then from my aisle seat that I had identified on computer months before to one in the middle section stuck between two crying babies. But I'm a minister, so I smiled and I did not complain. A few minutes passed. She came back. She said, "Sir, we need to move you again." I got up and she walked me to a seat in first class. I was happier in first class than in coach. And ever since then, I've never been able to preach a sermon saying that money plays no role in happiness. But Dr. Myers argued that happiness depends not on our wealth, not on our status, but on our attitude. We can, he argued, be happier by choosing our comparisons intentionally. So when traveling on a long plane flight in coach, I remember a movie I saw in about 1972 called The Immigrants, a Swedish movie, where people traveled to America from Sweden on a wooden ship. I remember the images of people throwing up, people becoming ill, people dying, being buried at sea. And then I think of myself in coach, and I think, oh, things are so much better. And I feel happy. I think about the miracle of flying and how fast and comfortable it is compared to travel just 100, 200 years ago. By choosing our comparisons intentionally, we can be happier. Dr. Meyer says, this is why religious activities involving denial often give people a feeling of happiness and spiritual renewal. Now, Unitarian Universalists do not have a regular practice of fasting. And maybe we should. The Islamic practice of fasting during Ramadan is a good example of denial followed by happiness. A month of fasting each day from sunrise to sundown creates a contrast between hunger and eating. And this contrast makes us happier when we sit down to eat. Another example is common in religious organizations, the silent retreat. Now, for those of us who enjoy talking, the contrast between our normal life of speaking and talking and debating issues and a silent retreat, being present with other people but not speaking. This reminds us of the happiness of a simple conversation. In his research, Dr. Myers found that people who attend a worship service at least once a month report being happier. Surveys across North America and Europe reveal that religious people report feeling happy and satisfied with life more often than non-religious people. In one study, religious people were twice as likely as non-religious people to say they were very happy. In America, religious people are less likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, less likely to divorce or to be unhappily married, and less likely to commit suicide. Furthermore, people who go to worship at least once a month are physically healthier and they live longer. As I said, Dr. Myers published his findings back in 1992. Now, around that time, a man named Dr. David Lykken read an article about happiness written by Dr. Myers. He read it in the Journal of the American Psychological Society. The article reported that happiness is largely unrelated to income or to educational achievement or social status or whether a person is married or single. Now, it occurred to Dr. Lykken that he already had in his computer at the University of Minnesota data on middle-aged people who were a representative sample of the population of Minnesota. More important, part of his sample was twins. Dr. Lykken was a behavioral geneticist and professor of psychology and psychiatry at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Lykken died in 2006. He and other researchers had already found that genetically identical twins who were separated at birth and raised by completely different parents were still remarkably similar. And he wondered if happiness could also be genetically determined. By the late 1990s, he had studied 120 pairs of reared-apart twins and four sets of reared-apart triplets. He measured happiness by having the twins fill out a questionnaire. These are some of the questions. Do you think that your capacity for happiness is less than others, higher than others, or in the middle? By capacity for happiness, we mean the ability to really enjoy the good things in life, if and when they come your way, to experience pleasure, enthusiasm, satisfaction. Not whether you are happy right now, but whether you can be truly happy, joyful, high, when things go right for you. Again, do you think that your capacity for happiness is less than others, higher than others, or in the middle? He asked these questions of twins who were genetically the same but were raised in different families, raised apart. Based on questions like these, asking identical twins raised apart, Dr. Lykken concluded that our baseline levels of cheerfulness, contentment, and psychological satisfaction are largely a matter of heredity. He argued that our happiness is at least 50% biologically determined. When I read this, I thought about my own unscientific work as a minister. I've noticed that a few people seem happy almost all the time. They seem always to see the glass as half full, no matter what life throws at them. On the other hand, I've noticed that a few people seem to be chronically unhappy, chronic complainers. For them, the glass is always half empty. I remember a man and a woman in a church I once served. The man was generally positive and the woman was generally negative. One November, the generally negative woman proposed that we have a coat drive at the church, which I thought was a great idea. And coming from her especially, I thought, what a positive, affirming thing to do. She invited members of the congregation to bring any excess coats they had to the church. She would take them to a homeless shelter in the city. The generally positive man heard about the coat drive and he volunteered to help. And the Sunday morning came. Everybody was told, one Sunday, bring your coats to church and we'll take them to the shelter that day. Well, people brought far more coats than anyone had expected. There were at least 150 coats, and they were in good condition. These were not trashy or torn up. These were excellent. It seemed to me that no one, no matter how negative, could find anything wrong with this successful coat drive. However, as I was leaving the church today, walking out of the parking lot, I heard the chronic complainer say to her cheerful helper, "They brought too many coats." How do they expect me to fit all these coats in my car? This is a disaster. And the positive gentleman was saying, it's going to be okay. We're going to work it out. It's going to be fine. I thought of these two people when I read the research that a person's baseline level of cheerfulness and psychological satisfaction are largely biologically determined. If the twin studies are correct, the woman in my story could not help but see the problems. She was born that way. And the cheerful, positive guy could not help but see the positive nature of things. He was born that way. Well, to summarize all this, what became our national mission statement was articulated nearly 300 years ago by Francis Hutcheson, a Presbyterian minister living in Glasgow. He taught that the ultimate goal of life is happiness. He believed that we become happy by helping other people, and he believed we can only do this if we are free and equal. Happiness requires no discrimination against people of color or against women. This idealistic Presbyterian clergyman was the first person to say, that action is best, which accomplishes the greatest happiness for the greatest number. Well, this positive view of human nature became one of our country's founding ideas. And for over 200 years, we've expressed opinions about the meaning of the words, the pursuit of happiness. But only recently have people started to do research on happiness. One of the first books on the subject, as I said, was published in 1992. And Dr. Myers gave evidence that after we meet our basic needs for shelter and food and security, money doesn't make any difference. We can become happier by choosing our comparisons intentionally. But following Dr. Myers' research, Dr. Lichen at the University of Minnesota published evidence that our genetic makeup partly determines our happiness. He suggests that our happiness is about 50% determined by our biology and 50% determined by how we choose to live our lives, how we choose to make comparisons. Like Dr. Myers, Dr. Lichen agreed that happiness is a feeling that exists within a contrasting field. In my own life, I remember an incredibly happy moment eating a canned peach. It came after hiking for 12 hours in the Grand Canyon. It was the contrast between that long, hot hike and the sweet juices of that peach that came out of that can. I was so happy. Contrast makes all the difference. So if you came here today hoping I could tell you how to be happier, I would say that one key is in the contrast. If we can remember a time when we were hungry, then we are more likely to feel happy eating a meal. If we can remember the pain of hard work, then we are more likely to feel happy when we lay down on a soft bed to rest. And if we can remember the time when we were lonely, then we're more likely to feel happy when we sing together in a community of friends. So think about when you were lonely and join me in singing our closing hymn.